At Sopra Banking Software, we've been busy hustling away to bring super fresh, cool, and awesome innovation to the auto finance market. Our enterprise floor plan solution is still the best of its kind, but did you know you can now get SFP wholesale in a full and true software as a service solution delivered in a matter of weeks? And did you know you can manage your risk portfolio with no physical auditor? Drop by our website, soprabanking.com, to find out more.
Hello and welcome to the Auto Remarketing Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Overby, Senior Editor of Auto Remarketing, and our guest today is a friend of the show and frequent collaborator with our Cherokee Media Group events, and that is Mr. Steve Greenfield, who is the founder and CEO of Automotive Ventures. Steve, great to talk with you again, and thanks for being back on the show.
Joe, thanks for having me. It's always a thrill.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the big news out of Automotive Ventures this month is the launch of the Dealer Fund, which kind of in short is going to help dealers not only navigate, the auto tech of over the next decade, but also kind of actively invest and participate in it. So, Steve, what can you tell me about what prompted you, to launch this and kind of get this going?
Yeah, so it's a great, good question. So, about 20 years into my career in automotive, I decided that I was going to make a pretty radical shift from being kind of a corporate guy to starting down the path of a VC. And, the coaching I got from other people who started venture capital funds is that, you need to get a track record. So we 14 months ago, at the very end of 2020, started a small fund. We raised $7.3 million from 67 investors. 21 of those are dealer principals, and got started. So, we've now been investing out of that fund for just over a year. We've made 12 investments, and we've learned a lot. We've learned a lot from just the process of, building a brand and trying to attract as many entrepreneurs as possible, but also from the investors, specifically working with the dealer investors, and, kind of had an aha moment recently where we're like, this is pretty interesting. If we were able to create a dealer-only fund, and only have dealers as the investors in with VCs, that's called the limited partners or the LPs, mm-hmm. but as investors, then and focus those energies on understanding what their biggest needs are, and then harness all of that and synthesize that into your areas of investment thesis, and then go hunting for the solutions that are going to uniquely address the dealer's needs, you kind of de-risk the entire venture capital model because you aren't making a bet on a company. You're actually going out and finding the solution that addresses huge dealer needs. And, we believe firmly after validating this now with dozens and dozens of dealers, that the timing is right. And I think that this plays also into the fact that there's a lot of change going on in the industry. And I think that we're seeing an acceleration of the change. It's amazing to me to see, we can get into today's, some of the recent news to me in the mm-hmm. industry has been a head scratcher. We're knocking down historical silos, and you and I like to both talk about, the blurring of lines. Mm-hmm. And, for the average dealer who's on a monthly cycle of being heads down and trying to operate, I think it's really a challenge for them to like once in a while pop their head up and say, what are the dynamic changes coming to the industry and how do I prepare my business to be resilient against them? And I would maintain, it might be self-serving, but I would maintain that, you've got to stay abreast of all these technology changes and choosing good technologies can perhaps, weather you and make you more resilient for the future.
So would the funds primarily be used, as you mentioned, to the kind of these new companies and these startups that are, solving various pain points for dealerships? Do you see it also potentially being used for a dealer that might develop that technology themselves? I would assume those are not as common as startups entering the space, but do you see potentially dealers building their own technology and this fund helping kind of push that along?
I hope so. I mean, you're observing the same phenomenon that I am that, 10 or 15 years ago, you would never see a dealer building technology, but I think the barriers to building, hiring a developer or two and getting a solution built, even if it's rudimentary, are lower. I think I probably speak to one dealer a week now. That's about the average, who comes to me and says, "Hey, I got something. You know, we built something. We're only using it in our stores, but we want to extend that outside of our stores." And, you know, examples that have made that leap would include things like A to Z Sync, mm-hmm. and Fuse Autotech, for example. The former being out of Champ and the latter being out of Walzer. But you know, they tested those solutions within their four walls before they ever thought about going external and getting other customers, other dealers outside of their dealer footprint. But both have made that leap. So I think that I love it when dealers call me and they've built something themselves. I've got a few others that I probably can't divulge right now that we're talking to now that I think are going to get really, really good escape velocity outside of their four walls. But who better to like define the solution to needs than dealers themselves? So I would hope that we look back in 5 years and at least a few of the companies that we invest in out of this fund are dealer built and dealer owned solutions. And we help them drive adoption across other dealerships.
So as far as the dealers participating in the, you know, actual contribution of investment and that sort of thing, who's going to be the typical participant in this?
Yeah, so we've given this a lot of thought because we've also had a chance to learn a lot from watching the dynamics and the interactions with our existing LPs. But I would say that, typically it's the multi-rooftop owner who sees technology and embracing early technology as a source of competitive advantage, who also probably is like the thought leader with their 20 groups. They are the ones really pushing the envelope, but they also recognize the amount of change coming is a little daunting. And, those couple together where they're willing to embrace early tech, they see early tech as a source of advantage and are trying to look around the corner and anticipate what's next, are really the folks that have been outstanding LPs for us. And we've got a number of them in the fund, and the first one that is, and have been really exciting. So if we can basically build a power group of progressive dealers, we're gonna have these thought leaders within the industry that when we do get them together face-to-face a couple of times a year, it's gonna be much more powerful, I think, than any 20 group could possibly be. So it's gonna be a little bit of like a sort of an exclusive club where, you know, there is a buy-in to participate in the fund, but we will do everything that we can to form a sense of community around really, really progressive thought leader dealers. And then, you know, if we're able to harness, say, 50 owners of like 1,000 stores, I think, and we're already investigating this, there'll be all kinds of other perks that we're able to provide back to that group of dealers, discounted rates on things. We'll do everything that we can to keep an eye out on other opportunities for perks for participation in this fund.
So, you know, with the with all the funds that come in and you guys eventually, you know, will invest in technology and new companies and that sort of thing, how will the decisions be made in terms of where the funding goes?
So that's a good thing about this, because I'm asked this a lot as we're talking now to potential dealers that want to invest. They're like, mm-hmm. So give me some examples. What are you going to be investing in? Or do you have a list of companies? And I'm right. Like, no, actually not. We're actually starting to travel later this month. We're heading up to Detroit to see three dealers up there on the 29th. And I'm starting to do the roadshow of the LPs that the dealers that have committed as investors, because I want to spend time with them up front, getting inside their heads and understanding what's causing them anxiety. Where do they see opportunities for efficiencies at their stores? You know, what do they think is going to play out with EVs and direct selling and the competitive landscape for these online sellers, et cetera? Harvest all of that. So I'm actually intentionally not going in with a hypothesis about what we're going to invest in. And we want to harness the collective wisdom of all these very progressive dealers into our areas of investment thesis before we ever go hunting for solutions. But, you know, a couple of examples, because we had probably 12 meetings with LPs at NADA. A couple of examples are, for example, you know, dealers are generally frustrated with the amount of paper that they still have to push around in the back office. So, you know, in this day and age, the question is like, in this era of DocuSign and online notarization with homes, why on earth do we have to have wet signatures? Why on earth do we have to have any paper documents? And it's amazing to me, right? So I think that, we need to solve that. And there are some solutions out there within automotive, but this may be an opportunity for us to look outside of automotive and see what solutions can come in. I think another thing that came out up from a few meetings this past weekend at NADA was, what I would call, robotic process automation, which all it really means is if you've got a human manually key punching things into a computer and it's a repetitive task, that human puts the same keystrokes in 10, 20, 30 times a day. If you remember back at the beginning of Excel, we were able to record macros when you had repetitive tasks and just play the macro and it fills out the Excel spreadsheet the same way every time with whatever data you're pointing it to. It seems like there may be an opportunity there to say which tasks are most repetitive within a dealership and then getting robots to effectively fill out those forms. Well, the nice thing is there's never any errors. It's 100% fidelity. There's always an audit trail and you don't have to worry about whether or not you can hire people and you can free people up for a higher and better use of their time. And I'm willing to bet that as we go in and spend time with our dealers, there's going to be all kinds of manual processes that we can start to automate, which one drives more profit margin for them. But equally important, I think it's getting hard to hire people, especially right now with COVID and people aren't reliable or they can't be hired. So I think if we can automate processes and take humans out of the equation, I think it makes a lot of sense for dealers. And those are just two examples that we've heard so far. I'm quite certain as we do this road tour at the beginning of this fund, we're going to come up with all kinds of interesting ideas from dealers that we can then take as a hunting license to go find solutions to uniquely satisfy those needs.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And to your point about automation, if you happen to find anything that automatically transcribes interviews, I think a lot of reporters would be interested in that. But to your point, I mean, that's like, in my line of work, that is a manual, tedious task that there's really no easy way to do it. You just got to do it, right?
I'll give you a hint. Any one of our listeners today. So go to otter.ai, like otter, uh-huh, like the swimming mammal, and then you can have them on your Zoom call. And it does a pretty good job of transcribing and allocating the responses to individuals on the Zoom call, even if you've got multiple people. I've been amazed. We've been using it. And AI right now that can recognize voices and different voices, mm-hmm, and transcribe accurately, it's been pretty powerful. So I don't know if that helps or not, but there are services out there now.
Gotcha. Well, I hadn't heard of that one, so I will check it out. But to that point, I mean, I think you're onto something there where it's, dealers probably have, a million different pain points within their four walls that, they need either to be automated, made easier, not having to lug around all the paperwork. And that's really what you're going to be finding out when you go on this road tour.
That's right. Yeah. And there may be all kinds of things that I've never, mm-hmm, even conceived of before. And I think, what I said earlier, we may find, and I've had conversations with dealers where like, we're not going to find a vendor that solves that at NADA, but that's okay because there's a lot of technology that has yet to enter automotive. And I think this fund will be the venue by which we pull in technology that's brand new to automotive. And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Like how much of the problems we find from dealers are going to be able to be solved by existing technology or new technology that has yet to make it into automotive.
So for example, you could learn a pain point a dealer has, see how that problem is being solved in industry X outside of automotive, and then say, hey, does this ABC company have an application for this technology in automotive, for example?
Yeah, I mean, you think about, like, I was reading something recently that Amazon now has almost as many robots as humans in their factories. Not surprising. You see these pictures and there's like robots moving around, right? Picking things, packing boxes, et cetera. But then juxtapose that against the average dealer's parts department, where you've got a bunch of parts in there. They may or may not be keeping track of which ones are aged and which ones are turning quickly, et cetera. I think that, I have yet to see a V-Auto for the parts department. And I think more importantly is like with robotics now, why can't you have, robots stocking the shelves and picking parts and always knowing exactly what's in stock? And I don't think that's too much of a Jetsons kind of futuristic thing. I think that, we could see a lot of like robotic automation of the parts department for a dealer, which not only tracks turnover and maximizes that, but also just like reduces any human error with these things. And, this is very common outside of automotive. If you go to, like I said, any Amazon warehouse, you see a lot of robotic arms moving things around. But within automotive, I mean, I haven't yet been to a parts department that tries to automate it 100% without any human interaction.
So in terms of funding, what is the end goal in terms of funding for the fund, and where are you guys at this point, and what are some next steps there?
Yes, so we're aiming to close a $50 million fund and get approximately 50 owners with 1,000 rooftops, so about 20 on average. But you know, we've got a lot of single rooftop dealers in our first fund who are coming into the next fund, and you know, we love them, and we think there'll be a space for like bigger dealers to come in as well. There's nothing magical about getting 1,000 actual rooftops represented, but I think from a marketing standpoint, when an entrepreneur looks at us and says, man, you have 1,000 rooftops behind you, and they're going to see like, wow, if I take money from you, you're going to really change like the inflection point of my growth and drive faster adoption. The minimum investment that we're taking is $500,000. But the way that venture capital works is we don't call all the capital at once. So it's not like they sign a $500,000 check to us. Over a four-year period, we only call the capital from the investor as quickly as we need in quarterly kind of installments over about a four-year period. I'd rather, as a venture capital manager, have the money stay in their account than pull the money out. Try to get that done by sometime mid-year, you know, probably September, maybe 6 months from now. And we'll probably do an early close in April, which will allow us to start investing out of the fund. But I'm actually in no rush to get investing out of the fund. What I am in a rush to do is start to do this roadshow where we're meeting with these thought leader dealers to start to build up the framework of the investment thesis.
Yeah. Well, and that when do you kind of kick off that roadshow, if you will?
Well, we started at NADA. Like,
oh, NADA, yeah, okay.
Meetings. Yeah, we booked a conference room in one of the nearby hotels, and we had 12 meetings over 2 days there. So it was quite busy asking those questions, like probing questions and leaving them open-ended. And, you know, I want to hear from dealers their concerns, but also where they're seeing today huge inefficiencies with their stores. And, you know, that we will all synthesize and test out for our investment thesis. But so we started, we've got more trips, this month. I think that my travel schedule is really starting to fill up with these meetings. And, you know, as dealers commit to the fund, the first thing I want to do is get out to their operations, spend time with their executives and start to hear from them, because it's going to make us a lot smarter around what the biggest dealer needs are.
Well, folks, be sure to go to automotiveventures.com/dealer fund to learn more about the dealer fund. And speaking of Steve's travels, be sure to catch him at next month's Auto Intel Summit. We're here in Raleigh, North Carolina. He's going to lead a discussion with our Emerging 8 honorees. And Steve and the team at Automotive Ventures have been a big part of that over the years. And, you know, we're really excited to see what's in store this year. But Steve, before I let you go here, I got kind of a fun question for you. You know, there's a lot, especially, you know, in the world of television and movies right now, there's a lot of kind of buzz around startup culture and, you know, venture capital investments. I mean, even in automotive, I mean, there's the docudrama right now on TV about Uber and you know, the kind of the venture capital side of that and how it all got started and you know, litany of other shows as well. But I want to get a sense from you as someone who is in tune with the world of technology and venture capital. What does Hollywood get right about that world, and what do they get wrong?
Well, it's a good, I'll preface it by saying, you know, I'm only just a year and a half into this journey that I'm on now. But what I think we're all witnessing is there's a little bit of the Silicon Valley kind of quote unquote, fake it till you make it. We saw that with Elizabeth Holmes, with Theranos, we saw it with WeWork, et cetera. And part of that is frankly, the VCs are to blame, because they very aggressively push these entrepreneurs to take a lot of money and then think very, very big. I mean, we all heard of unicorns and decacorns, and you know, there's this push to get huge exits for venture capital. And with the venture capitalist, they're okay if, you know, half of their companies don't make it and blame out. But then we hear these sensationalized stories where you've got an entrepreneur who was very aggressive to begin with, backed by you know hundreds of millions in some cases of venture capital, pushing them to be really aggressive. So you see these colossal flameouts, but then you see like stories like Elon Musk and the number of times you heard Elon Musk was like so close to running out of money, and he could have like hit the rocks and flamed out. But you know, here he is, like maybe one of the biggest success stories of all time in terms of being an entrepreneur who really, really pushed the boundaries. And I think that entrepreneurs look at stories like that, and there is this perverse incentive for them to be hyper aggressive, fueled by VC. And then we hear these big stories like Theranos, like WeWork, and it's very interesting. But if nothing else, it makes life interesting. I mean, we have a whole new vernacular thanks to Silicon Valley, be it fake it till you make it, be it unicorns, be it whatever. And you know, I think the average person now at least is very familiar with how venture capital works.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and there's a you mentioned that Silicon Valley, the actual valley, but the television show that ran on for a few years was kind of, I mean, it's kind of a good starter course for just kind of learning about just at least the terms and how, you know, things get done from A to B. But, you know, we'll see one day, maybe they'll have an HBO show about automotive ventures and, you know, the exciting world of automotive tech, because, you know, as you know, I mean, it's just right now is just everything's just, it seems to be moving at light speed. And like you mentioned in your, you know, in announcing the dealer fund, that we're going to see more change over the next 10 years than we've seen the past 100. And you guys will have a front row seat to it. But Steve, thank you so much for joining me today and for chatting and kind of getting me up to speed with the dealer fund, and look forward to see where you guys go next.
Well, thanks, Joe. I appreciate everything you do for the industry and Cherokee Media. I look forward to seeing you face-to-face in a couple weeks.
That's right. We'll be sure to catch Steve at next month's Auto Intel Summit again, where he's going to lead a discussion with our Emerging 8 honorees, and you can find more at autointelsummit.com. And again, the website for the dealer fund is automotiveventures.com/dealer fund. Steve, always good to talk with you, and that's going to do it for today's episode of the Auto Remarketing Podcast. I'm Joe Overby. Thanks for listening.
At Sopra Banking Software, we've been busy hustling away to bring super fresh, cool, and awesome innovation to the auto finance market. Our enterprise floor plan solution is still the best of its kind, but did you know you can now get SFP wholesale in a full and true software as a service solution delivered in a matter of weeks? And did you know you can manage your risk portfolio with no physical auditor? Drop by our website, soprabanking.com, to find out more.